This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're rolling along on this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, Mike Palm, in for Michael like he is every Friday as we welcome you in live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Lots to get to over the course of the next hour in about 30 minutes. Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer are going to join us as we get into some NFL storylines, specifically honing in on the Browns. We got lots of college basketball, women's college hoops as well, and other news items. I did want to start here, Mike, with one thing because we talked so much in hour one about these young quarterbacks in the upcoming draft class. One thing I failed to mention when we were talking about the teams that might need or might grab a quarterback in the first round was the Giants. Giants owner John Mara didn't rule out taking quarterback. He said, quote, if they fall in love with a quarterback and believe it's worth pick number six or moving up, I would support that. Your thoughts there with the Daniel Jones contract and everything around it?
Well, I think they are looking for a quarterback, aren't they? They made that decision that to re-sign Jones, and I know Michael spoke out about it at the time and his close relationships with the front office there in New York. But certainly they don't think the Italian kid is the answer for long term, right? I mean, he's a nice story and a feel-good story with the mom and all that. But they are in need of a quarterback. I don't know how far they are away, though. If they get a quarterback, where are they, right? I mean, this is a rebuild for this for this franchise. I mean, and you look at their history in the last, what, 7 years, 6 years? They're the bottom three in the NFL in wins. They're far away here. They're far away. You can make the argument the Redskins are, well, Commanders, football team, whatever they are. The Washington team, much closer to be having a shot and being competitive with Philly and Dallas. New York is not. Now Saquon's gone. I get it. Maybe this is the time to draft the kid and develop him as you're building your team around him. It would make sense to me. Daniel Jones is not taking them anywhere.
The Tommy DeVito experience, to your point, was not it either.
It's entertaining. I mean, it was entertaining.
It was fun.
Right?
It was fun while it lasted. My follow-up to this is something I asked Michael about yesterday, and I already know your thoughts on Drake May, but because Brian Daboll had so much success with Josh Allen, and May is constantly compared to, like, body type, Josh Allen 2.0, could that be a guy that they like? They were at his pro day yesterday.
Yeah, but it's... not a body type. The runner, not the runner that Allen. Allen got
a lot. He had 700 yards on the ground last season.
Yeah, but also some of that's designed run, not what Allen does, scrambling. I would say this. Allen got a lot better. He was developed very well to that point. He was not that accurate at Wyoming. I remember they played Iowa. I watched him. I didn't think the kid was anything that great. Now, obviously, he's a tremendous talent. They haven't been able to get over the hump, but I mean, he's right there amongst the top three or four quarterbacks in the game. I guess that's an interesting point about development, because I know at one point Michael said, I don't know if there's anybody that's made a bigger leap in their accuracy as a passer from where they came into the league after or after year one going forward than what Josh Allen did.
Yeah, that's not usually one of the areas that you can develop and get a guy better.
All of a sudden he became very accurate. That's what I say a little bit about Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of the things. You can work with him on his reads, though. You can work with him on getting him to get the ball out quicker. Just it's hard to get him the pass just to be that much more accurate.
Giants quarterbacks in 2023. So that's Tyrod Taylor as well included in that with Tommy DeVito and Daniel Jones.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about it.
34 total QBR, 29th in the league. Worst QBR by a team in any season since the metric began. Any Giants team since the metric began in 2006. They were 27th in yards per attempt, 26th in touchdown to interception ratio, and 85 total sacks taken. It was rough. The Giants.
What was Tyrod's individual QBR?
I don't have that pulled up right now.
I would assume it was the highest. It was above it was above the 34 average.
I'm sure it was.
He gave him a chance to win a lot of games. I'll tell you that. They should have won that game in Buffalo. And Daboll kind of scapegoated him at the end on the goal line. But, I mean, I thought he always gave them the best chance to win, more than Daniel Jones.
I see his rating 89.1. I can't pull up the
QBR.
It just flashed at me. But the Giants minus 175 to go with a wide receiver with their first selection in the draft, plus 130 if you think they go quarterback. I want to get it here because I have the page pulled up. My internet is just hating me with a deep burning passion. QBR 47.7. So far better than the 34 total, but not a big leap. Let's go to the NBA here real quickly, because Draymond Green was ejected earlier this week, less than 4 minutes into the Warriors game against the Magic, had that pair of technical fouls, chirping the official endlessly. He explained himself on his podcast yesterday. Here's Draymond Green.
I said what I said. I deserved to get kicked out at that point. And what I said, if I'm all the way honest with y'all, I kind of was trying to turn my body and angle and go to the bench. And I said what I said, like a little too soon before angling my body to the bench. We need to win games. So, like I said, not going to overreact like, oh, man, like stuff is never as good as it seems. It's never as bad as it seems. Like, I know where I am. I understand what I'm doing moving forward.
But what did he say? Let's get to what we want to know is what did he say?
Where's the mic'd up?
He said he deserved to get thrown out. I wonder what he said. Can you find that in the official's report that they turn into the league?
I don't know.
I think you, like the NFL.
I know post game the guy that came out and spoke representing the officials said it was awful. So
I'm sure it was really awful. And maybe he'll get suspended if it was that awful.
My thing is, like he says, needs to be the exception, not the rule. But knowing Draymond Green, it is the rule.
Yeah, you're right.
It is. And especially with this Warriors team where every game is so important right now, it's got to be frustrating. I know they're -3,000 to be in the play-in.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the standings. They're only one game up on the Rockets for that final play-in spot right now, and Houston's on a 10-game win streak.
And you pull for the Rockets. I want to see the Rockets get in.
And I know they have the tiebreaker over Houston right now, but they still have one more meeting together coming up next Thursday, which will be huge. Houston, to your point, +450 to make the play-in, while the Warriors are -3,000.
You're going to take a shot with Houston?
I don't mind that.
Do it.
Maybe
Send
I will.
It in. Send it in.
Send it in, Jerome. Make the playoffs, the Warriors +285 to miss -370. But like, I don't think they have a chance to make the actual playoffs. If they make the play-in, that's one thing. The playoffs are another. They have to win two games on the road.
Well, if you like Houston, they might, you could lay the 375 too. I mean, they won't even be in the play-in. Are the Lakers going to be in the play-in? The Lakers will be, right?
Yeah. Nine.
You give that
a nine.
And what is their odds to get into the actual bracket? Minus, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're like -1,800, I think. Like, it's crazy. Anyways, I just thought that was interesting. If there was a bet to be made, like, I don't mind Houston. That 10-game win streak, won 12 of their last 13. If they keep winning, they're only a game back of Golden State right now. Warriors all the way out.
I really like Denver. I really like Denver to win it all.
Yeah, they're going to be awesome.
I really like it.
Denver, I have a fun... later on in the show, we're doing Does Palm Have a Qualm?
Oh.
And I have an NBA future that I'm curious about.
Okay.
So we'll get there. Let's talk a little opening day, though, yesterday, because there's a really funny moment yesterday. Stephanie Kamerschak, who is usually our producer on the show on Fridays, she and her husband, well, no, it's mostly her husband. Her husband's a big Angels fan. So they're texting about the game yesterday. And he texts her immediately, Mike Trout, first inning home run. This team is so bleeping back. Her response, no hesitation. Trout, first inning home run. Angels lose 11-2. And that was at noon, like right as the game was getting started. What happens? The Angels lose 11-3.
Sandoval couldn't get out of the second. Yeah, it was ugly right away for them.
It's just happening all over again for the Angels.
Trout, Ohtani, Rendon, right, who hasn't produced since they got it, but and nothing, still nothing. They still haven't played a meaningful game past July. And how long? It's pretty amazing. Trout's homer was awesome. I didn't know if it would get out. It was such a deep part of the park, but it was over quickly. Sandoval had runners on. Immediately. Were you on the text or she screenshotted and sent it?
No, her husband screenshotted it and posted it on Twitter.
Oh, he did.
Because in the first inning of the game.
So he posted it then?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm saying. That's like, just, what's it like to be an Angels fan and have your season over before it begins?
Here's what was interesting to me yesterday is there were 26 starting pitchers and the average number of career wins for those 26 starting pitchers was 41. Like, it's so many opening day starters, your ace. It's a lot of guys that are in their third or fourth year are now the aces on these staffs. I know you didn't get Wheeler, who would have added to that total. Darvish had the most wins of anybody that started. And then I think Berrios was second and Nathan Eovaldi was third. A lot of overs yesterday. There were a lot of runs scored in these games. It was a good pitching matchup in Chicago. I thought was the best game of the day. If you like pitching, Tarik Skubal and this Crochet guy, who I asked Frank Thomas about because I don't know a lot about him. He had Tommy John. He came back from Tommy John. He throws 100. He was a reliever last year. They're stretching him into a starter, and he got the openings to start. And, I mean, he lost 1-0. So, interesting guy to keep your eye on as you move forward. So, we're early. It's, like, hard to even pay too much attention because of everything. I'm also very focused on the NHL. These great cup playoff races. The NHL, I mean, right now. Like, last night, we've got two Sweet 16 games. You've got a handful of Major League Baseball. They've got college hockey. And, like, where are you going to squeeze in the NHL? We got some very compelling races for the playoffs and seeding here.
I was going to say that, and I know you're interested in the women's NCAA tournament, too.
I love the women's side of it.
It's like, there's a lot going on right now.
Those markets are obviously much softer than the very liquid markets that we're betting into with basketball here.
I know we only have a minute here, but do you like any of the games today?
I bet Texas. I bet Texas after the first round was over at 20-1. I think Vic Schaefer's really good. They got a couple of bigs. He's very good coaching. He won a title at Mississippi State. They won't turn the ball over. They're going to defend you in the half court. I think nobody's talking about them. They got the last one seed, and nobody's talking about them. They could be sneaky. And I know, Sy, you're going to have to play a great game to beat South Carolina. But I like the value. And if we get to the Final Four, we can make money off the ticket.
How crazy is it that South Carolina going into the Sweet 16 is minus $1.50?
Yeah.
Like, that's how good they are.
And they got beat last year. And they got beat in the semifinals last year by Iowa. They're very, very good. And Tennessee had them beat and let them have a wide open three at the top of the lane of the SEC tournament.
I'm excited for all of the teams remaining, because in women's basketball, like, it really is the cream of the crop at the top. Yeah. And that we have UConn and LSU and Iowa and Caitlin Clark and all. It's a really, really fun women's tournament this year. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, we'll go back to the men's college games. Two Elite Eight games are set. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like the Lombardi Line, you're going to love the GM Shuffle podcast as well. Our guy, Michael Lombardi, former NFL GM, gives his unfiltered, full-blown opinion on players, teams, coaching decisions every single Monday and Thursday throughout the year. You can download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle podcast from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcast. We are rolling along on the Lombardi Line. Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Palm in today. And we'll get into some more college basketball talk, because March, they call it madness for a reason. And we've already seen one seeds out after it was such a big deal. So I want to get your perspective on this before we dive into a couple of these Elite Eight games, because we saw the dogs in the early first round. Everything was coming up. Favorites took back over in the round of 32. Now we're seeing a little more upset watch. Is that, like, how tough is that not to see trends carry over from round to round from a betting perspective?
Probably good for the book that people can't bet into the trends. We're lucky because I know a lot of books had a tough weekend Saturday, Sunday with the teams winning money line, only one upset outright. But we're different because we get sharp action and contrarian action. So, I mean, it's been like the hold's a little less than we would have thought, but it's not tragic. And we won all four games. We managed to make a small winner on Saturday because we get that. So we are not like in lockstep with everybody else. I think when you say that, you know, the first one seed out in Carolina, there was really, it's UConn and then it's Houston, Purdue. And then it's right. I mean, I think there's lines of demarcation on how good teams were. And the fourth one was, you know, it wasn't going to be Tennessee. Could they, if they did better in the SEC tournament, could Arizona, if they had won the Pac-12, gotten it? It was kind of, Iowa State made a claim for it. Like three or four teams that were kind of that 4, 5, 6, throw them together in a hat. Carolina wasn't a typical one. They backed into it because everybody else struggled, and they won all their regular season ACC games and got to the final of the tournament before losing to NC State. So I don't think it's that shocking. I know people, because Alabama didn't play defense and had a much better first half of the year than second, were a little surprised. And Carolina had a 10-point lead. They were up 8 at half. There were several chances kind of to put them away. They didn't do it.
Yeah, they should have won the game.
Right?
As somebody who had a North Carolina future, it's very frustrating watching how that game played out, especially late, seeing you're up 1 and you take a 3 with 15 seconds left on the shot clock. Like, how do you let that happen? I don't get it. So there were a lot of moments like that that were just frustrating. And kudos to Alabama, who finds themselves in the Elite Eight trying to punch their ticket, them and Clemson trying to punch their first ticket to the Final Four. So somebody's going to get it. It'll be great. I'm excited for this matchup, this game, because Clemson is playing so well. But I was a little bit surprised to see at open, Alabama was a favorite, which, okay, 1.5 point favorite. Immediately bet up here to three, 3.5.
DraftKings to three here, to three. So a friend of mine, Matt Novak, we almost have identical tickets in terms of to pay money, right? He has Alabama and I have Clemson. So maybe our hedge is to share, like give each other a percentage so that one we have a team into the Final Four. He has Alabama at 55-1 for 500, right? And I have 125-1 for 250. So it's almost the identical payout, right? The stake in the ticket. Like, and so before it was going to, a line was going to come out, right? As you know, like Alabama shooting free throws with 1 second left. He said, what's this number going to be? We're texting on the phone. He lives in Omaha. And I said, I think it's 1 or 1.5. Because he said, you think it's 3? I said, I really make the game 1 or 1.5. And then he texts me. He says, you were right. And I was right. It opened 1 and it went to 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And exactly. He's like, at 3, I like Clemson. So maybe that's how we monetize our positions, because it's funny we hook up our teams they're playing at a very elite level, as I mentioned earlier.
That's very fortunate, though, that you got that to work out where you're in this
right?
position. So, absolutely.
The bad part is, though, that's the 4 region that lines up with UConn. So you can't get them all the way to the final, you know, likely. Look, Clemson's playing at a very elite level. They're as I said, very good with their hands. They didn't shoot free throw well, but I love them because in a close game, they make all their free throws. They shoot almost 80% as a team. Alabama, I think, has more flaws. Alabama has more variance in their game. If you told me Alabama beat him, I'm not going to be shocked, but I like Clemson in this spot, and I like him at 3. So that's why I wouldn't, like, if I didn't like him, I'd be more apt to maybe get a third of the position off, because I'm going to get off on UConn, right? I don't think they're going
to
beat UConn.
Well, and to your point, too, I heard a ton of people making an argument in the Sweet 16 for Clemson. A ton of people. I don't recall anybody making a case for Alabama going into that game with North Carolina. Like everything that I was seeing across the board was the best bet of the day is UNC -4. I was seeing that all over the place.
I saw a lot of it. A lot of that. And they're not losing. There's no way they're losing. You know, Alabama got a good first round matchup with the team that wants to play their same.
Like, why believe in them so much now, I guess, was where I was going with that.
They wanted to play. They got a team in Charleston that wants this like Alabama light, right? That's not going to drive the basket on them. They're going to play their style, and they ran them out.
We knew that was going to be an over.
Right? Well, 200 points.
Jeez.
And then in the second round, I mean, it was a crazy game, right? The game was drunk, I think. They said, the announcers said. By the way, I'm very critical of announcers. You know that. Even though I think Fran Fraschilla right now is the best color guy in college basketball, I think all these crews have been very good listening to these games. And Ben Gundy's good for somebody that doesn't really call the college game and comes in at the end. Like, Barkley and Kenny Smith are like comic relief, right, in the studio, kind of. But Ben Gundy was very good last night. And they're not afraid to say, and Jim Jackson was very at, when these guys are making bad decisions and not aware of situations and taking shots that are very low percentage, I mean, which is good. So I think the crews have done a good job. That game was crazy, though. But, like, there was very little high basketball quotient, IQ, on that time in that game. It was just everybody was going to the hole in that game against Grand Canyon, right? And I was sort of disappointed that Grand Canyon didn't have a little bit more poise in that game. So you could kind of say, look, Alabama got a lucky draw, and then they got a team that didn't play very well, smart against them. So there's some excuses. And down the road, they gave them so many points. But, I mean, you can't really quibble. Although Carolina had control of the game more than they did, they made the plays down the stretch. They shot the ball better, took better shots, and they deserved the win. I actually thought there was a world where this game might be a pick 'em, that I thought that it would open 1 and people would bet Clemson. But no, no, sir.
How about the other game coming up Saturday? Top seed UConn, open 7.5, quickly goes up to 8.5, taking on Illinois. The total went down from 156.5 to 155.5. TD Garden, virtual home game for UConn once again. KenPom has this as a 6-point game. Yep. But looking through, so since UConn got healthy, like fully healthy in January, the only team that's beat them is Creighton. They scored 85 points and hit 14 threes to do so.
Beat them by 20.
Yes.
In Omaha.
Yes. Yep. What I keep hearing is that if there is a team remaining that could do that, it might be Illinois. Brad Underwood has the nation's number two offense in KenPom, one of the country's most talented offensive players in Terrence Shannon. What do you think? If there is a team that could do it, could it be Illinois in the Elite Eight?
They give you matchup problems, but they don't turn you over enough. I don't think they create enough extra possessions on the defensive end of it. And I think they're going to run into a problem like San Diego State ran into, where they're going to get killed on the boards. I don't see it happening. I'm not even, I don't know.
I guess if the game, 50 to 29, is that what I said earlier? 50 to 29?
Maybe 27. I don't even, something like that. I don't think there's a scenario. I could make an argument for the over because Illinois will play fast. And I think if they get behind and you can get a game that's 6-8 points as you come down the stretch and get a lot of fouls, you'll also be aided in that to get this game over 155.5, but I can't pull the trigger on the side.
I said what I said about Illinois to play devil's advocate exclusively because I'm all in on UConn. Like I just, after what I have witnessed just game in and game out from this team, I find it very, very hard to believe that they're going to lose. The spread, different story, 8.5. I still, based on everything that we've seen the last 2 years in the tournament, I feel like you have to still feel pretty comfortable laying 8.5, even though it is against a good team. And I love the Dan Hurley post game yesterday. We suck in close games, so we have to settle for the
He's
alternative.
He's always crying, isn't he?
I hope that his wife, does what she needs to do with the dragon underwear, yeah, or whatever. Like, I don't know.
You're Doja Cat now. I said what I said. I still don't lay points like this. Right, I just don't play these games. Like talking to a mall with 12, I said you're going to lay there. I don't want to do that.
Huge spread for an Elite Eight.
I'd much rather play games where the margin is, 3 to 6 points. I think there's more control from an in-game perspective when you do that. But yeah, this team is special. How do you feel? Like how going in when you go back in time a year? How did you feel heading into the championship game last year? How optimistic were you that San Diego State was going to be the national championship?
Not optimistic. Right. My hope was that it would be a close game. And I felt based on the amount of defense of San Diego State that maybe they could keep it close. Yeah. Maybe they could keep it under double digits. And they did for a second. They brought it back within like 5 or 7 late. They end up ultimately losing that game by 17, lose by 30 yesterday. I just feel like this team has a way of getting out with a larger lead fast.
They did it to Northwestern. All of a sudden it's 20. Yes. It's just like, boom, in between those 4 minutes TV timeouts, the game's over.
Yes, the minute you breathe, they're taking advantage. Yeah. They do such a great job at it. 3 wins this tournament, 39 points, 17 points, and 30 points, dating back to their first game they played in last year's NCAA tournament. 9-0 straight up and against the spread. The closest win that they have had was by 13 points, laying 8.5 in this one against Illinois. We're going to hit the break here. Plenty more Lombardi Line ahead. Stay with us on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Today is the final day to sign up on our VSiN Pro annual subscription, where you can get your first year for only $199 instead of the usual $240 price. All you need to do is use our promo code Lombardi. That gets you pro access to everything we do for the entire year. Daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game and round of the tournament as it rolls on. Remember, this offer expires today. Sign up now, vsin.com/subscribe, and use that promo code Lombardi. Back here on the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Mike Palm in for Michael today. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line is Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat reporter for Cleveland.com, the Cleveland Plain dealer at Mary Kay Cabot on X. Still lots to unpack, I'm sure, from the owners' meetings in Orlando earlier this week. There really is no offseason, is there, Mary Kay?
Oh, my goodness, there really is not. There are like 2 weeks in June where you sort of feel like you can slow down a little bit, maybe go on vacation. I'm actually coming back out to Vegas again in July. So looking forward to that. But for the most part, there's really not a whole lot of downtime.
Mary Kay, I want to ask you about the quarterback situation in Cleveland and sort of the pecking order. I thought it was very interesting last year that I thought the Browns very early anointed DTR as the successor to Deshaun Watson. I mean, PJ Walker played three games. They went 2-1, and they're away from a deflected interception in Seattle and going 3-0. Yet he gave way to Thompson Robinson, who maybe was in a little earlier than he was ready for. I thought they would not sign Joe Flacco because DTR would be the quarterback in waiting if Deshaun faltered. But then they went out and signed Jameis Winston. Explain from a Cleveland Browns organizational perspective where the pecking order is with their quarterbacks.
Well, obviously Deshaun is number one. Then you've got Jameis number two. And then it will kind of be between Tyler and DTR for number three. And we'll have to see how that all plays out. I do know that the Browns love DTR. They were very happy with what they got from him last year, even though, as you mentioned, he was kind of thrown in to the fire a little bit, really wasn't ready to start that game against the Baltimore Ravens here in Cleveland. But he came back, he beat the Steelers, and he did some nice things. So I know they really think very, very highly of DTR. And it's really just a matter of how this all shakes out in the preseason.
I know having to go through five quarterbacks last year was a lot. And so they wanted that support in the quarterback room. But I feel like a lot of people were surprised that they did bring in as much as they did. But because of Deshaun Watson coming off the injury, that raised a lot of questions from fans about his readiness and availability to be ready come training camp and for week one of the season. I know you have an article up now. I think it just came out yesterday on this situation. What can you share about the team's confidence in Watson right now?
Well, first of all, four quarterbacks is not really unusual at this time of year or even throughout training camp for the Browns because they had four last year as well. So that really shouldn't be raising many red flags. They like to develop quarterbacks and they like to maybe keep one around on the practice squad for a while and whatnot and have an extra camp arm. So that really isn't sounding off any alarm bells or anything like that. In terms of Deshaun, they feel really good about where he's at right now in his rehab. He just started throwing last week for the first time after four solid months of rehabbing. He had the fractured shoulder socket repaired. And the thing about this injury is there's no precedent for it. I cannot find another NFL quarterback, at least in modern times, that has had this surgery. So you can't really say, oh, well, this guy came back in 6 months and he was totally fine. There's nothing. I mean, he's going to be blazing his own trail with this. But fortunately, he has one of the best shoulder surgeons in the world that operated on him. And everybody's super optimistic about the way that it's going right now. And that they believe he will be starting the season in September.
Mary Kay, I think many around the football world were surprised that Mike Vrabel did not land a head coaching job immediately once the offseason started. But Cleveland has adeptly brought him in to be a consultant, a player and coach consultant. What kind of impact will Mike Vrabel have on this team in the coming year?
These guys are so excited to have Mike Vrabel here. Of course, he's right from Akron, Ohio. He was a Browns fan growing up. He went to Ohio State. So he's got all the local roots and those things like that. But he's a great pair of eyes to have in terms of personnel. And then also on the coaching side, why wouldn't you want someone like that around who's been a head coach, who's been successful, who's been an NFL coach of the year? You don't get to be NFL coach of the year unless you're really good at your job and you're really smart at what you do. So they are excited to use him as a resource. Again, both on the personnel side and on the coaching side, and it will evolve. They don't expect to have him around very long because they believe that he will get a head coaching job after this season.
Yeah, no doubt in my mind either. Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, Browns beat reporter. Coach of the year reigning is Kevin Stefanski right now. And I know he and GM Andrew Berry have been going through some contract negotiation extension talks. What's the latest from your perspective?
Well, when we talked to Browns owners, Jimmy and Dee Haslam at the meetings, they said they're close to these extensions. These guys are excited about it. That's great. It's good for Cleveland. There's stability finally in the front office and on the coaching staff. That hadn't been around for a long, long time. So to have these guys moving forward together, I think it's really great. And they will move closer to their goal of trying to win a Super Bowl.
Mary Kay, you have a very interesting role in addition to covering the Cleveland Browns. You're one of only 50 people that vote on the NFL Hall of Fame, one of only four women that last count. Maybe it's more now. Can you describe when you consider head coaches for their Hall of Fame, whether they're Hall of Fame worthy or not, how important is it factored in Super Bowl titles versus number of wins and longevity? And the second part to this question is, for a person to get into the Hall of Fame, is it very important for them to have an advocate or someone important in the game really pushing them in order to get them in?
Well, certainly it helps if you have really great people that are willing to go to bat for you and do a lot of PR for you and get emails and statistics and things like that. I do think that that is helpful. And you see that happening a lot when it comes time to start voting. But in terms of Super Bowls, yes, for a coach, I think Super Bowls do matter. I think that's the pinnacle of your career. And you have to have one or two of those, I think, for the most part, on your resume if you want to be an NFL Hall of Fame coach. So those are, you know, that's one of the biggest criteria in my mind.
When it comes to the AFC North right now, it appears to be the toughest division in football on paper with how good these teams have become. Where do you view the Browns in that pecking order right now?
That's a great question. It is such a good division. It really is. And if I had to pick a division winner right now, I think I would struggle to do it because any one of, I think, at least three, the top three teams could win the division. But you can never really count out those Pittsburgh Steelers. And now, of course, we know that they've got Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, and the competition should bring out the best in both of those guys. So Mike Tomlin never has a losing season, and they make the playoffs in years when nobody believes that they will. So I think really it is the toughest division in football. In terms of where the Browns are right now, it's all going to come down to how does Deshaun Watson come back from this shoulder injury, which, as I mentioned, is very rare. It's a rare shoulder injury and surgery. And these guys absolutely believe that he will come back healthy, but that's going to be the key to the season. If he does come back nice and healthy, I think they should be right up there, and I think they will challenge for the AFC North title. And not sure they're going to win it, but I think they will be one or two.
Mary Kay, the Browns went out and got Jerry Jeudy, whose value might have been, you know, if taken across the league, taken a hit since his, you know, he was drafted and so far in his NFL career. And then they locked him up for 3 years. Why the excitement? Why the demand from the Browns for Jerry Jeudy?
Well, they've had their eye on Jerry Jeudy for a long time. They really liked him coming out of the draft in 2020 out of Alabama. And I think they feel like he hasn't been able to reach his potential yet. I think they believe that once they pair him with Deshaun Watson and get him into some stability and give him some new life and some new eyes on him and some guys that really believe in him, I think they feel that he will flourish and reach his potential. So they actually have him through 2027, which is 4 years from now. And they believe that they will probably get some Pro Bowls out of him.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but can you help me figure out what happened with the defense last year where they were so good at home and then struggled the way they did on the road?
Wow, that was really incredible. In terms of, I think it had a lot to do with the fact that they played better quarterbacks on the road than they did at home. They got a few breaks at home in the quarterback realm. And we'll see how that goes this year because they have quite the tough lineup of quarterbacks coming into Cleveland next season.
Mary Kay, we so appreciate your time, and I hope you do get a little bit of vacation.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
It's Mary Kay Cavett. Make sure you check out her work, The Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. Follow her on X at Mary Kay Cavett. When we come back, we're wrapping up today's edition of The Lombardi Line. Does Palm have a qualm? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook because right now we have a VSiN exclusive for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every 1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use the promo code Lombardi when you sign up. Again, that earns you a $500 bonus bet for every 1,000 you wager right now. And don't forget to make a stop at Total Wine and More. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine & More. Plus, please drink responsibly. Must be 21. We are wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Palm with you. And it's time for Does Palm Have a Qualm? I'm going to go through a few bets, most of them being plus money props, and see if you might have interest or if you have a qualm. Okay. Starting with the draft. We've seen a lot of steam on Mr. J.J. McCarthy over the past week, following some comments from Tom Pelissero on NFL Network, all of the glowing reviews from his former head coach at Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. J.J. McCarthy to be the number two draft pick, down from 18-1 earlier this week to plus 275. Would you have a qualm with McCarthy going number two?
Puke. Well, she always says it, queasy or what, uneasiness, Steph. Always says, we miss you, Steph. No, this is ludicrous. 275. Another number that's missing is zero. How about 27.5-1, maybe? First of all, Jaden Daniels, you heard it from Brian Kelly. I mean,
going, yeah, in Washington.
I mean, now he's going to be number two. He went from mid to late first round to maybe top 10 to four. Now two. I mean, he was a game managing quarterback at Michigan with a really good team. I get it. He's a winner. Tangibles, Harbaugh, blah. 275 is a joke. Big qualm. Big qualm.
You are, however, buying the steam on Jaden Daniels from -120 to -160.
I do.
Okay. Yeah. Love it. How about wide receivers in the draft? The prop currently is sitting at 6.5. Michael always jokes all the time on the program, oh, we're going to have 10 wide receivers. This is supposedly...
he hates that drafting wide receivers. He hates it.
This is supposedly, though, a very strong wide receiver class. Over 6.5. Do you have a qualm?
I don't know enough about the depth once you get through the top three. What do you think? You know more about it.
I was trying to go through a bunch of mock drafts, and I feel like this is one of the markets that, at least based on the mocks, is very on the nose.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen a couple that have had 8, but bulk of them are 6 or 7. So it's like right on with what you would expect this number to be. I would guess 6.
Okay, so now I'll say no qualm with the over at plus 150.
Okay. This one, I think that you will have interest or intrigue in.
How do you evaluate Malik Nabers? How high are you on Malik Nabers?
I think he's awesome. I do. I think he's really, really good. But I don't know.
Do you think there's a world where he gets the first wide receiver taken over the name Harrison?
I don't.
Okay.
I know that, like, Michael has... He's in the know and he talks to a lot of these people, whereas I do not. But based on like what I've seen and the way that Marvin Harrison Jr. has been talked about for the last couple years
now. They say he's the best player in the draft,
correct.
Right?
Correct. You look at all these big boards and he's number one. It's like I would find it very hard to believe for Marvin Harrison Jr. to be supplanted. And I know a lot of people, when they look at tape, they go to that Michigan game where he basically like caused that interception that McCorn threw. Like, it was 97% his fault that pick got thrown. Bad day for him to have a bad day. But every other big play that needed to be made,
I don't know. I thought
he did everything.
I thought against Notre Dame, Emeka Ubuka stood out to me more than Harrison. Mm. Just to my eye.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like... it would just be hard to believe that he would get upset. And he's an odds-on number for a reason, right? So it's pretty rare for those guys to get squashed. How about this one in Major League Baseball? Shohei Ohtani to win NL MVP plus 750. Do you have a qualm?
So I have a qualm because there's still going to be voter perception that he did something wrong. Where if not did something wrong, there's something wrong with his camp and the way it's run. And he's not pitching this year. I would say if he's pitching this year, I could overcome the betting story, but he's not pitching. He's only hitting, and the team's loaded. I have a qualm. I think that's too short.
This is such an intriguing story. I want answers, and I know we're not going to get them for such an incredibly long time.
If you had to wager, and here's your wager, not Major League Baseball, but did Shohei bet on sports? He's come out and said, I bet on no sports.
Ooh.
Did he bet on any sport? I would bet yes. And this is just conjecture. We don't know.
I would bet yes, but I'm not sure I would say yes with this $4.5 million situation that it's him betting on sports with this. But the fact that he said, I've never bet sports, I don't think I'm buying that.
How does the interpreter get a $4.5 million line of credit?
Because you're assuming if you're that guy that you're bankrolled by Ohtani. But
that's a big assumption. With the guy's got so much to lose that you want to be, he would be associated with it.
Well, it's supposed to be underground, right?
It's one thing. There's these poor guys in Detroit that are in the parking lot of the practice facility and put a bet in on their phone. I mean,
so much of this stuff happening right now. I hope it's like gets out of the way these first couple years where gambling is more prevalent for the public, and then things calm down because it's not a good look right now. It's really frustrating.
Well, the worst thing is this center in the NBA.
But I think, if anything, that's good to show that DraftKings reported it, got through this very quickly. If anything, that shows legalized sports betting is working, that you're finding these things.
But here's, I mean, the gaffe is there. If you're going to put up props on guys that play 7 minutes a game, there's the gap. I wanted to ask you this, and I'm sorry, Steph, we're going to interrupt this, but you are around these college athletes all the time. The big push to no more props on amateur athletes. Mm-hmm. Right. And when Derek met with Gloria, the commissioner, Alvarez, the commissioner of the Mountain West, she said they're going to push for this because there's too much harassment of these athletes. People are writing them letters. They find their phone numbers and going after because you cost me so much money because you didn't get over 23.5
points. If it was still amateur sports, I would agree.
But because of NIL?
Because these kids are getting, they're getting paid now.
They know what they got into. It's like the movie Airplane. They bought their tickets.
I feel like it's basically professional sports to an extent now. And that, like, I don't mind it. I don't mind
really?
It.
Really? Okay. I'm glad but I asked it, you. I mean, you're around these athletes all the time.
That's my personal opinion. Okay. I don't mind it. Okay. Does Palm have a qualm with UCLA women knocking out LSU today, plus 130 on the money line?
They should be favored. UCLA should be the favorite in this spot. And everybody's with Angel Reese and Kim Mulkey and LSU. UCLA should be a 1.5 point favorite. They're right now up to 2.5 LSU. No qualm at all. I'm not saying they're going to win, but they certainly, you can't say they don't have a chance in the game. They should be favored. I know the NCAA would love to have a Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese regional final.
Everything's
set up though, right? Everything's set up for all these blockbuster games and the handle is up 400%. It's just amazing.
The ratings are up dramatically.
The 5 million people are watching them play. What was Holy Cross?
a game preview in the LA Times this morning. The article headline, UCLA LSU is America's sweethearts versus its basketball villains. We were talking about this in the commercial break. Kim Mulkey did herself such a disservice by talking for 4 minutes in her press conference about this hit piece that's going to come out with her from the Washington Post. People that had no interest in women's basketball, had no interest in Kim Mulkey, now are interested and want to read this article.
The greatest
probably got
thing
a Washington
that ever
Post
happened
subscription.
To the Washington Post.
Exactly.
Greatest thing.
Exactly. Okay. NBA. Anyone other than the Celtics winning the Eastern Conference, would you have a qualm? They are an odds-on favorite right now.
Patrick has a question in our debate segment. Who has the best chance to beat the Celtics in the East? And my answer is the Celtics. I mean, I can't draw a line around a team and say, New York's not healthy enough, probably not good enough. I don't know if Miami's good enough. I love Spo as a coach. I guess it's Milwaukee. They have a lot of flaws too. Like Boston should win, but can they get out of their own way? I probably wouldn't bet to know. I just love Denver to repeat. I really, and I don't follow the NBA that much, but I think the Clippers are done. The two other teams that, you know, OKC and Minnesota, they don't have the experience in the playoffs. That's the way this NBA works. Nobody's like this one and done shot in the NBA comes from nowhere to win, right? It's always been a stepladder. You get better each year. You break through this ceiling. So I don't have a qualm with the bet, but I can't identify a team.
Bucks 3-1, Knicks 10-1, Heat's 12-1.
I would bet if you said you have to bet one of the three, I'd bet the
Milwaukee.
Heat. I'd bet the Heat. I'd take the 12-1 more than the 3-1.
Hey, they could get hot. We have one NHL game today.
Yep.
Devils Sabres.
Yeah.
Would you have a qualm with the Devils winning the game and at least one Hughes brother scoring a goal?
No, I love it. I like it.
Okay.
Buffalo was awful at home against Ottawa. I like this bet.
I was looking through both Hughes brothers. They bookended the scoring against Toronto. Yeah. Luke scored first. Jack scored the last
goal. What if you took that both will score? Or that the Hughes brothers combined will score over 1.5.
I think they both would score back-to-back games.
I don't know. It's interesting.
One scored in the first meeting with Buffalo this year. The other scored in the second meeting. So I thought that was a fun one. 30 seconds. Rangers to win the Stanley Cup. Would you have a qualm? First team that clinched a spot?
I think they're going to be dangerous in the East. I think it's Ranger. I think it comes from the Metro. I think it's Ranger. Ooh. Rangers or Carolina come out of the East.
That'll be fun. Fun show today.
Thank you, Stormy.
This was good. That's a wrap for us today on the Lombardi Line. Up next, Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson on DraftKings Network. You'll have Pablo Torre finds out. Good luck with your bets. Enjoy the Sweet 16 rolling on tonight.